This episode is brought to you by Podomatic, the easiest way for podcast fans to become podcasters. Go to podomatic.com or search Podomatic in your app store to start your own podcast for free and find your audience. Hello and welcome to episode number 358 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
Good. We are back from our fun little adventure away from horror last week, which was a joy. I'm still thinking about Oppenheimer. It's one of those films that just really sticks with you. So yeah, I'm hope that everyone else enjoyed it as much as we did. But we're back to talk about our bread and butter that is new horror. One that we've both been excited for a little while now, after it kind of came on our radars in the form of a little trailer a few months ago. We'll be discussing God is a Bullet shortly. But in a year that has had not much news, or not much great news either, oh my God, we have some bangers to talk about this week. There is three news items, and all three of these are very much about things that I love, and are all pretty positive, I would say. So we've got to kick things off with the massive news story in the horror world of the last week. We discussed the synopsis of the upcoming Saw movie last week, which we were both pretty down on reading it, I think. But obviously we were waiting to see this trailer because we wanted to see what this thing actually looks like. Coming in just next month now, which is crazy to say, at the end of September. For Saw X, with the return of Tobin Bell and Shawnee Smith. And we've seen the trailer finally, which I think definitely, you know, is that synopsis. I think we were very well prepared for what the story is going to be, which the trailer gets across effectively. But I was, you know, pleasantly surprised. I'm not going to get giddy because I've done that before with Saw. I do think it's a good trailer, first and foremost. I think it's a pretty great trailer. Like, I think it will do very well for this film because it feels like Saw for the first time in a long time. I think that was like my biggest takeaway. And granted, I think Tobin Bell is doing a lot of the heavy lifting, because when you get the great man playing this iconic role, it really is one of the best things we've ever had in horror. Truly, like, you cannot overstate. I think Tobin Bell as Jigsaw is up there along with any other actor, and you know, tie them to any other horror role. I think it's so good.
Yeah, it's up there with Robert Englund, Doug Bradley, you know, these kind of iconic, not just the villains, but the actors that made those villains. You know the Michael Myers is you know, multiple different people, whereas, you know, these certain people, it's just them. And yeah, definitely he's up there.
Yeah, like, the two you named are probably, like, if you're making the Mount Rushmore, there's a good three to start with, you know. Yeah. And then you can fight between yourselves about who you want as the last one. But I think that is the company that he's rightfully alongside.
Oh, man.
But yeah, like, it's great to see him back, first and foremost. He's obviously had, like, cameos recently and stuff, but this is the first time we've properly seen him, it feels like, in a while. And we've had these kind of sideways looks at Saw and fucking Saw movies that aren't even called Saw, which just feels so ridiculous now looking back on it. Like, just call the name of your movie the actual franchise, for God's sake. And so I'm jazzed for it because I think it looks simple and it looks fun. You know, it's Tobin Bell doing a bunch of traps. I think the traps look great in the trailer as well. Yeah. I think that the color palette especially looks nailed on, like old school Saw. It's something that they've wanted to go away from it and make the recent Saw movies look different, which is fine. I'd have a problem with that, but they, you know, I liked the identity of those original films. You know, mostly that kind of orangey, murky, warehousey look that it has back. And I really like that. I like the kind of quick jump cuts as well, which is hard to get, obviously, how prevalent that's going to be in the film, because most trailers feature them. But it seems like it's got that more edgy, kind of low-budget style that those original films had. And a lot of pig action as well, which I'm such a huge fan of the pig.
A lot of pig action.
Yeah, like especially with Amanda, like to me that's always her role. You know, it's there's many different people that have donned that outfit in the universe, but like that to me is always Amanda. And so just seeing the pig multiple times in the trailer was enough. And I was like, oh yeah, we know who that is. But it was cool that we got the glimpse at the end. Like, I don't really think we needed it. And I would have preferred to have not seen Amanda. Because I think the trailer was good enough without it as well. But it was there and it was cool. Like, so I really liked it. I'm very excited for this movie now based upon this trailer, you know, very much more so. I think this is a massive turnaround from last week. Obviously, I'm trying to be as low-key as possible, but I also want to just be excited for things. But what did you think about this? Because I was like, man, this is cool. And it seems like the general reaction, like I've not seen a bad word about this online. Everyone's buzzing for a new Saw movie, which is very cool.
I was really upset by this trailer because
you liked it.
Because I just didn't want them to fucking do it again to me and get me in. I watched this trailer thinking, oh, okay, they're going to try to tug on like, you know, nostalgia and everything else, but it just felt authentically Saw. This felt like I was watching a highlight reel of the old movies, but it was new content. You know, it was, you know, Jigsaw being Jigsaw, traps looking like Saw traps. You know, so many of the traps looked very violent. You know, there was the clip of the dude cutting into his scalp, a woman that looks like she's chopping off a limb. Like, it looked like real, you know, gnarly kind of Saw traps at their craziness. And it's like, you know, I think this feels like what the first, like, this is what Saw 8, you know, should have been. You know, it feels like we've had to wait 13 years for this movie. And it's a shame because I'm like, fuck, Tobin Bell could have been making these movies for the past 13 years instead of what we've had. Because I think that's right. I think Saw 7 was like 2010, right?
I believe so, yeah. And yeah, that was like the end. And then obviously we've had kind of the what is it, Spiral and Jigsaw since then.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, this really, yeah, surprised me by how much I enjoyed it. And I just kind of looked at it and I was like, this is the best possible thing you can do. Like, you know, what else can you do at this point? Jigsaw's dead. Like, please don't fuck it up and bring anyone else in other than Amanda, unless you're going to go Hoffman, which you just don't have the balls to do. And, you know, the only way you can tell stories with those two is to do it back when they were still alive, you know, to just crowbar in other bullshit to give us fun movies. Okay, cool. And so, yeah, at this point, I'm like, well, unless you're going to be gods and bring Hoffman back into it, just be safe. You know, just give us cool traps. Give us what we saw in the trailer and don't try to really crowbar it into being like, oh, this is what set up Saw 4 or, you know, that cop in Saw 5. Well, it's their mum that he's killed. So that's why they're the, you know, just don't do that shit. Like, just give us Jigsaw killing people and that's enough, you know, with what we've had in the past. But yeah, I really liked the trailer and like what you said, just so much about it felt authentic to the, you know, the original movies. And for the longest time, Saw's not looked like that, where it blew me away because I just wasn't expecting to watch a Saw trailer. You know, we've had 13 years of Saw not feeling like Saw. So just when this felt straight out of like when we were getting these 1 year, you know, and this is just the next year and we've got another trailer. Like, it really did feel like that. So yeah, like I'm all in at this point.
I think the look is a massive part of that as well. Cause I agree with you that it does feel like when we were getting annualized Saw sequels that, you know, for the most part were exceptional for a long, long time. But yeah, I think absolutely that simplicity is the key here. Like, don't overcomplicate this. You know, there's so many different ways that you can try and reinvent the wheel when at this point, that's not what we need from Saw. That's a problem for down the line because the mistakes that have been made in the past at this point means that you're in the recovery stage and you need to just make a good film and what you've relied on are past cruxes, but those crutches are amazing. Like Tobin Bell and Shawnee Smith are so fantastic, and we're lucky to still have Tobin at a level of a health level that he can still do this. And that's not going to be the case in potentially 10, 15, 20 years. So do this now, do this well. And it looks like they're doing it. And then, yeah, you can worry about doing other stuff down the line. But yeah, I think it's one of those things of don't run before you can walk. Just make a good Saw film, because we haven't had one for God knows how long. I'm excited. It looks like, say, I was blown away. There's the only thing I didn't really like from the trailer is the music, but I think that is just because, and it's not the I didn't like the music, because the music was great, but it just wasn't Saw at all. The style of song that they used for the trailer, it's a great song, but I was like, it was when Billy was coming out and stuff, and I was like, this feels such like a modern day movie trailer. It doesn't feel like Saw to me. Saw always had like edgy new metal in those kind of like early days, especially on the trailers, and they wouldn't have like a fancy licensed song in the trailer.
I don't know, though. I feel like if we'd have just had 13 years worth of Saw sequels, I think it would have transitioned to that point, because when those movies were coming out, all horror movies were trailers with new metal music. In the mid to late 2000s, that's what horror trailers were. So, you know, that's why this one does feel like, oh, this is Saw 15. And Tobin Bell has just been the lead in the last, you know, 8 Saw movies. And that's what we've had for the last 13 years. That's what this movie feels like.
Yeah, but also I think that speaks to the fact that it doesn't feel jarring to see him. No. You know, like there's certain times when you bring an actor back, you know, like in a lot of these legacy sequels that we're seeing, where there is a bit of a wake-up call. Whereas I feel like he can, like... he just is this fucking character, man. Like he's so good at playing John Kramer, where I feel like he can do it so effortlessly. And as hardcore fans of the franchise, you just fall in love with it immediately, because you're like, oh my God, it's the look, it's the voice, it's the way he carries himself. Like he is John Kramer. And it's so exciting to see that, like, we're finally going to get that in a full length movie, like I say, for the first time in so long. Because, yeah, you look at the sequels and obviously, like, a glorified cameo in Jigsaw, which was by far the best part of Jigsaw. Yeah. But, like I say, so many of the sequels being set after his death in 3, that, like, it's always just a scene or two. Whereas, based upon this trailer, it feels like this is probably the most Tobin Bell, potentially, we've ever got in a Saw film.
I thought that, like, we're getting all this, like, treatment stuff and everything, like... you know, it really feels like, yeah, he is going to be on screen a hell of a lot, because you think, you know, Saw 1, he wasn't on screen. Well, he was on screen a lot.
Yeah, you didn't know.
Yeah. And, you know, Saw 2, he's around a bit, and then he's dead in 3, you know.
Yeah, so 2 then, is probably the most we get of him, like, talking. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but even then, yeah, I don't know, actually. I think it might have been the one when he's got, like, the pregnant wife, you know, and they're all the flashbacks, you know, whichever one that is. Like,
and like I say, there is a lot through the flashbacks. They're just they're split across the movies, because like I say the whole, I think it is 6, which is the one that is the kind of breakdown of the American healthcare system, which this director did to direct that one. Like that is, you know, that's great, and there's a bunch of awesome John Kramer in that as well. So there's a lot to get excited for here. Like I say, I want to, I am torn, because on one hand it's like, oh, I don't want to be burnt by Saw again, but on the other hand I'm like, well, you gotta just get excited for stuff, otherwise it's just Warren anyway.
That's what, and I'm like, do you know what, fuck it, like, you know,
we don't lose out by getting excited for it.
I'll get hurt again, like, fuck yeah, it. Like, you know?
I would rather let the hope kill me at this point, because otherwise
it's a broken heart than never to have loved at all.
Exactly, like it's just dire otherwise, not being excited for something that you should be excited for, just because it may or may not hurt you in the future. That is the love and hate relationship of fandom in general. But next up, again, that's just the first of three bangers.
To be fair, that's normally a standalone episode in itself when a Saw trailer comes out. So.
Yeah, luckily we've only got a 2.5-hour movie to discuss as well. But next up, this is great, because we haven't talked about Arrow Video. We have talked about them, but obviously in a them not being involved in Fright Fest capacity, which sucked. Whereas now we get to talk about why they're the absolute goats of obviously home releases. Because they've kind of recently been doing a lot of their 4K restorations.
Yeah.
obviously with a lot of amazing Blu-ray releases in the past, and they're kind of, they've gone back and they've redone like the likes of Hills of Eyes. I've personally picked up American Werewolf in London. Have you gone and picked up any of their sort of 4Ks?
I definitely have. I couldn't tell you which ones are 4K and which ones aren't at this point.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm looking at my London one now and I forgot. It's hard to tell. Yeah.
I'm looking at my shelf and I'm like,
yeah, on the side they don't say at all.
Definitely some of them are 4K, but I don't know which ones.
Fair point. But this one is the one Tremors, that I've maybe? Been. Oh yeah, Tremors is 4K. Yeah.
Got Tremors, maybe Last House, maybe Hills. I don't know. They all look the same.
Yeah, Tremors was a great one. But yeah, so I've been waiting for this because this is a previous release, but there is a twist on it. Yeah, they're over delivering in a way, but this is still exactly what I've wanted because I've been just dying for Hellraiser to finally come to 4K. Obviously, this movie in general doesn't exist in 4K until now, and yeah, you know, I wouldn't want anyone else to do it other than Arrow. So yeah, Arrow Video are releasing the Hellraiser, of course, but not just the first movie. Originally they had the trilogy under Arrow, so only the first three have ever been released by Arrow. That's what I've currently got as the Blu-ray. There was like a, was it a, I can't remember what it was called, Yeah, something like that. Yeah, Scarlet.
Scarlet sounds better, but I think it was called Crimson, wasn't it?
I think you're right, because it's Scarlet Gospels is why Scarlet's in my head. And it's just a cooler word. But so they obviously had the first three, but no, they are doing a box set, the Quartet of Torment, which is, the first four movies all come into 4K, which that alone is mind-blowing and crazy. But then there is like another little twist on it, which is that the fourth movie, Bloodline, this includes not just like the original theatrical cut, but there is a new sort of work print version of the movie. So it's described as a newly uncovered work print version. And so I think there's special features that explain this as well, but it says it provides a fascinating insight into how it changed during post-production. The initial cut of the movie ran 110 minutes long, but the studio executives at Miramax demanded major changes that resulted in Kevin Yeager, the director, departing the project. The final cut ultimately ended up being 85 minutes long, and Yeager was so unhappy with the finished product that he took his name off the movie. And that's why Hellraiser Bloodline is credited to the fake director, Alan Smithy. So obviously there's a whole backstory here, much like we've discussed time and time again. That happened with Clive Barker movie,
Nightbreed,
yeah, which I really loved, and I think I think I've only seen like the re-released version, which Clive's sort of more happier with, like the longer version. I think that was the version I watched, because I know I watched your Blu-ray. But I loved that, and then so yeah, it's interesting that like this franchise is obviously Clive Barker's franchise has got this, and obviously much like plenty of the Wes Craven movies that we discussed, you know, with these work prints, the kind of talks of this being a different version. Well, there's three different versions, in fact, of Cursed, completely different movies where there's actors that play completely different characters, other actors that just aren't in the version that we saw. It's so crazy the way this used to work. Obviously, famously recently is like the Zack Snyder, for obviously people will know the Snyder Cut is probably the most famous version of this recently, where it's just a completely different version of the same film. But this is cool. Like, I don't really like Bloodline, or at least the version I've seen. So this is cool that there might be a version that I like of the fourth Hellraiser film. But regardless of that, this is exceptional. It's coming out just in time for Halloween. So this is October 23rd. Obviously, this is a UK release. But of course, the best thing about 4Ks is that they are completely region free. So you can buy this anywhere in the world and enjoy it. This was an instant pre-order for me. On the Arrow website as well, there's like a Chara exclusive kind of slipcase. So I'm definitely getting that version as well. But yeah, this was a dream come true. Like, I've wanted this for a while, like I said, ever since Arrow have started converting, and it's difficult because obviously a lot of these licenses expire You know, like back in the day, they had Dawn of the Dead, for example, for Blu-ray, and then obviously that's changed hands. And it was it Second Sight that released that exceptional 4K box set? So obviously these licenses kind of change hands, but obviously Arrow is our favorite, and I love their versions of Hellraiser anyway. So this is just, God, this ticks every box on so many levels. I'm so exceptionally excited for this. Are you happy with this news? And obviously there's a lot to break down here, but I mean, the first four Hellraiser movies in 4K for the first time, there's not really much, not much to love here, is there? Not much to hate.
No, it's one of them where I'm like, God damn it, because with the 4Ks, I have tried not to double dip.
Yeah.
Where they've gone back into their catalog massively, as you've said, and kind of redone everything. But all of the big ones I wanted on Blu-ray, I got. And so it's only been when it's been a recent kind of release that I've kind of gone for it. But this is one where, like, I'm like, well, I've got to double dip. Mm-hmm. Like, it's crazy. And, like, yeah, the addition of the fourth movie is very strange, and it feels unnecessary, but I'll take it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's cool. And everything you've just said, I'm like, okay, well, that's you know, adds to the coolness, where I'm like, okay, there's these different versions and everything else. But yeah, ultimately, it's getting those first two movies more than anything. The fact that you know, it felt inevitable if they were going to keep the license that we were going to get Hellraiser 4K. But I never thought we'd get Hellraiser 2 4K. Mm. And then the fact that then we're getting two more movies as well in 4K, I'm like, yeah, it's great. Like, I really love it. You know, and Arrow have been doing really well recently. You know, they've got the Psycho 4K.
Yeah, I was going to put that, like, in the news.
Yeah, like all four Psycho movies in 4K. Like, that's mad and, like, really good. And I think there was another one that they've just announced.
They recently did the Grudge one as well, because they already had the Ring and then they did the Grudge one as well.
Yeah. Oh, it was House by the Cemetery. They've got that.
It's 4K, yeah.
Yeah, like, 4K as well, like, so that's cool. Like, yeah, they, you know, they just seem to have been doing some decent stuff again. And I feel like the good thing is as well that they have gone mostly, like, through their back catalog now, so it is just a case of, oh, okay, now when they have cool new movies, they're going to be the 4K version. You know, you've got the Blu-ray, you've got the 4K to decide which to get.
It's a really good point about the box sets thing, because that was always one of our, not necessarily criticism, because we fully understood why they couldn't do it, but that was always the dream from a fan perspective of, like, they would have Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, for example, and that would be the only one they had, similar where they had just Psycho 2 as well. And like I say, this Psycho box set is insane that they've got the rights to all those films. So it gives me hope that, yeah, you'll see, like, could they do, like, the first four Chainsaw movies all together on 4K for the first time? And, you know, all of the, you know, I'd love, like, Romero's Dead trilogy in 4K and stuff like that. There's so much cool potential, I think, with getting a franchise. You know, like, they've obviously had many different Wes Craven movies over the years. Yeah, Puppet Master would be a crazy one as well. But, like, because, yeah, with Wes Craven, they've had, what, Deadly Blessing, they've had People Under the Stairs.
Yeah, like, Both Hills of Eyes.
Yeah, Both Hills of Eyes. There's so many ones that they could easily get, like, five or six and kind of do, like, a Craven Classics collection on 4K. Like, there's so much potential. I think the box sets are just so exciting. But, yeah, for me, this was the one. Like, I don't care now. Like, they've done everything I wanted, where... I just wanted Hellraiser. Like I say, that was the only one in my collection that I was looking at. And I was like, I'm going to double dip for sure.
What's the sick documentary called?
Oh, yeah, the Hellraiser one.
Yeah.
What is that called?
Is it just called not the Land Configuration?
No, it's the Leviathan.
Oh, Leviathan, that's it. Yeah. Like, that's on the Blu-rays, isn't it?
Yes.
So I hope that that's on the 4K as well.
Yeah. I'm really curious
about that. The features.
Yeah, I'll have a quick look now, because there's so many listed. Because that was on the original one, wasn't it? The first one.
You got it on the Scarlet and the kind of Blu-ray trilogy.
Yeah, I don't think it is.
I can't
see it listed, but again, I'm only having a quick glance. There's like multiple over 60 minute long features apparently. And yeah, just like how they made up Frank and just all these different things. But obviously that was just the first one. Like, maybe they've hidden it on a different one. I'm not too sure. But there's so many different new commentaries as well. Like, this is so insane. A lot of features for the fourth movie as well, which sounds really cool. But yeah, this is so great. And like, the we haven't even talked as well. Like, the artwork is so gorgeous. Like, this this thing is I couldn't believe it. It was one of those ones where I'm like, oh my god, just seeing this like new Hellraiser Arrow 4K art, oh, that's so good. Like, this is just awesome. Great news there. And then, oh my god, the hits just keep on coming. Because yeah, like, I love how varied all these three were, but it's like a new Saw movie which we're excited for, obviously an amazing release of one of our favorite franchises, and now we get to talk about an upcoming newly announced project. So a new film to look forward to, and it's certainly one that I've been waiting for. Certainly the director. There is some slight negative here, because it's maybe not what we would have wanted in a dream world, but I'm still very, very happy to talk about this. So yeah, courtesy of Variety, filmmaker Stephen Kostanski has an upcoming project, which, yeah, I'll get the bad news out of the way now. It's not Psycho Gorman related. So maybe we can kind of put a pin in that and come back to it, of like, I don't know what's going on with Gorman, if there's some weird, you know, rights issues, I really don't know. Because even in the last week, they released more, that they go so hard with the merch for Gorman, where they released like a big box VHS version of the film, and I was like, oh, that's sensational, I'm definitely buying that. But it was only shipping to US addresses, which was so annoying. So I couldn't buy it. And like I said, there's been so many different things with Gorman, and they clearly love it, so I don't get why. But this is still super cool. And it very much sounds exactly like what you would expect from this director. So yeah, his new movie, titled Frankie Frico, is coming apparently very soon, because production has already wrapped on the project, and kind of already has US distribution, as well as I think Raven Banner doing the international and the Canadian rights, which is the same as what they did for Psycho Gorman. So yeah, this movie is kind of, so it says Frankie Frico stars Connor Sweeney as he accidentally lets loose a trio of tiny troublemakers into his home, led by the maniacal rock and roll party monster Frankie Frico. It's a race against time, as Connor must defeat the rambunctious ruffians and clean up their trail of destruction before his wife returns from her weekend work trip, all while going on an unexpected journey of self-discovery. Yeah, this is very much a... Also, I think there's a... And then we can kind of get into it. Yeah, there's... the film is described as Kostanski's commemoration of various practical effects-led projects, including Gremlins 2 and Ghoulies 3. So this is very much him doing his take on that specific era of, you know, practical effects. Obviously, he's kind of delved in that in the past, but I think it's... Yeah. He's talked about that a lot during Gorman, that those are some of his favorite, specifically like puppetry work.
Yeah.
And you can just imagine the type of characters that he's going to come up with in this one. Yeah. So I'm just so excited. Like, it's, you know, it's described as a horror comedy and just everything that I'd want. It's obviously a new thing, which is extremely exciting. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think in general, we prefer new things. Obviously, I would, like, literally kill for anything new Psycho Gorman. But I'm so happy, because it's been far too long. You know, it's been over 3 years, and I've just been sitting here being like, this guy's far too talented to not get work in this industry. And so the fact that he's still getting to do, which is really, like, he's carving out a niche that is so exciting.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing for me, is that, you know, after PG, it's like, oh, okay, is he gonna just like get stuck in like makeup department and kind of doing stuff like that, because he's so goddamn talented at like the practical effects side of things, and I really don't want that to happen, you know. And it's kind of, you know, we had, what was it, he did the VHS segment, and he got like did a lot of Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, is he going to be kind of stuck out of the director's chair now and in the makeup department, and instead like seeing him kind of yeah, really carve out this niche where it's like, oh, this sounds like a spiritual successor to PG. You know, it's not a sequel, but it's very much in that wheelhouse that is, can he carve out this just crazy low budget, high practical effects, just zany horror movies? And I'm like, hell yeah, that'd be brilliant. You know, it kind of reminds me a bit of like Peter Jackson, you know, like early Jackson when he was doing these crazy zany horror movies, and look at what talent he's turned out to be. And like, you know, I can, you know, I just kind of see that parallel with these, you know, with what we know PG is and with what the premise of this is, that it just sounds very much like that, which I'm, yeah, very happy about.
Yeah, it's just so creative, isn't it? Like, he does, you know, the idea of Psycho Goreman was so radical and so crazy, and so, and to pull that off so perfectly. And clearly, you know, this has been something that has been cooking for a while. And it's very exciting that, you know, we haven't got to wait long, seemingly, because this isn't one that we're, like, waiting years for. Like, the fact that they're saying production is wrapped, you know, obviously there'll be post-production. So I can't imagine it's this year. Yeah. But who knows, with the fact that, like, they're talking about distribution in this news as well. Yeah. It's so goddamn exciting. And yeah, I think there'll clearly be, like, at least some references and Easter eggs in there to kind of tide me over. Like, I would love some of the kind of returning, particularly the council members, I could see slotting in right here. But obviously, it's clearly going to have this main trio of characters that obviously we went over in the plot synopsis. But I can't imagine he's going to be limited to just three puppets to go from, the 20 or whatever that was in Psycho Goreman. So I'm so excited. Like I say, this guy's so good. He's like one of my favorite people, because you can't compare his films to anything else. And it's so awesome. So yeah, I'm so happy about this. Like, I've been waiting years. He's one of those names, similarly with when I was like, after Hardcore Henry, I'd constantly search for Ilya Naishalkova and be like, what is this guy doing? What is this guy doing? And he eventually made another film. And so this is the same now, where like, I'm just so happy that we'll get to see another Steven film. So goddamn exciting. So yeah, this was awesome. Like, easily, like, we've never had three news stories that have made me that happy in a row before. So
no,
very, like, very happy.
Luckily, it's a small movie this week.
Yeah, exactly. But shall we finally discuss it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's talk about God is a Bullet. So yeah, this one kind of came out of nowhere. I remember just randomly seeing it on a news website where it was like, trailer for new God is a Bullet, with obviously a couple of names in this one, which must have been what drew me to watch the trailer. And being pretty happy with it, being like, oh, okay, this is, you know, a simple revenge tale, but has such a cool, distinct style to it. And it seemed like it was up our alley. So yeah, we've actually got to see it now. So yeah, I guess that's a very vague, you know, description of what this actually is, but let's just get into it. Like, what is God is a Bullet actually about?
Yeah, so God is a Bullet is kind of starring Bob and Bob and Case.
Yeah,
the unlikely duo, where Bob is this kind of small town detective who is a divorced from his wife and kind of, you know, not with his wife and daughter. And at the very start of the movie, his wife and her new husband get brutally kind of murdered, and her daughter gets kidnapped by this gang of heavily tattooed, kind of very crazy looking people. I guess, like, it's more of like a gang than a cult kind of vibe. They're kind of described as a cult in everything I've read, but it feels less culty to me and more like a motorcycle gang, like a bike gang, or, you know, that sort of vibe. That's how it kind of feels to me, more than like them worshipping a leader and being like this devout cult. But either way, this gang kidnaps Bob's daughter. And kind of in his attempts to rescue her, he comes across Case, played by Mika Monroe, who is a ex-member of the gang who managed to get out, and so she is trying to give him insight into the gang and ultimately into kind of finding and rescuing his daughter. You know, that's really, you know, it's taken, it's whatever one of these movies that you've seen before, but with this kind of, you know, the biggest thing with this is it's visually the way that this movie looks and the way that this gang looks. You know, they're this kind of tattoo culture that's, you know, they're very distinctive. It's not just that they're covered in tattoos. The tattoos all look very similar, don't they? It's kind of, yeah, it's almost like body paint than tattoos.
Yeah, it's a very sort of charcoal-y, isn't it?
Yeah, thick, black, charcoal-y, you know, kind of artwork where it's almost like reptilian skin on the characters. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at it is these intricate tattoos. So yeah, very driven by its kind of style and kind of, yeah, as Bob kind of starts to chase this cult down, he has to get more entrenched into their culture and namely their tattoo culture and kind of goes down that rabbit hole. And yeah, throughout the whole movie, there's a whole host of other characters that come into play. You know, hence why this movie is so long, because we do get to a point that there are these multiple kind of side plots with kind of other people in the police force and all of this stuff, which really does, you know, add a lot of lore to this story that almost didn't really need it. It was simple enough and kind of, it's like, okay, dad will do anything to get daughter back. Yeah. Okay. But like, it doesn't really matter how many times you tell that story. It's always true, you know, and you're always invested if the actors are good enough, which in this movie they are. So, you know, I was already invested from the plot and didn't need a web of other shit as well. But I, you know, ultimately wasn't against it either. But yeah, yeah. I kind of going into thoughts a bit, so I'll stop there. And do you want to take away what you think of this one?
Yeah, I think the other thing worth noting is, and I think it's one of the main reasons why the movie is so long, is because it's based upon a novel. Mm. So I feel like it's very obvious watching this film, because there are numerous subplots that take up a lot of time that would make perfect sense in a novel. But I think in a movie, you've got to be more succinct with the time. And you've got to kind of earn a longer time length, which I don't think this does at times. But I guess we'll kind of get into the subplot and the kind of the stuff, how they could have adapted it better. But like, overall, I really liked this film. I think it certainly captured what I wanted it to from the trailer, which was just the overall look and vibe of this film is so cool. And it feels alive. Like, it feels like a world. This doesn't just feel like a collection of scenes. It feels like a real time and a place. Kind of, it really reminded me of watching Candyland, actually, like, earlier this year. And how, as more time goes on, I like that movie even more. Because that really captured that as well, of just, like, a feeling. Like, it's a difficult movie to discuss in terms of plot and characters and stuff, because none of that stuff was really relevant in Candyland. It was more like, how did it make you feel? And I was like, yeah, it made me feel dirty, which I think was the intent of that film.
Similar to Candyland, isn't it?
Yeah, whereas I think this is that in terms of, like, the tone and the style. But then it goes super hard on story, and a lot of it's good, but like it just has too much story. I think, like, say there's an entire subplot which is trying to set up why. Like, I feel like watching the movie, I didn't really care about the why. I was like, yeah, there's just a cult/gang that are doing fucked up shit, and we now got our two protagonists tracking these guys down. And that was enough. I didn't care. I didn't need the answer to why. Whereas then I think the movie was like, no, we're going to spend 30 minutes setting up why and then explain the why. And again, in a book, there's obviously that makes perfect sense, because you're going to want to know that in a book. Whereas in a film, I just didn't care. So like, this entire subplot around why the cult targeted specifically this family, it just felt like a waste of time to me. So I feel like those scenes really slowed down the film. And really, unfortunately, did weigh it down, and that's why it's so long. Because I think the the meat and the actual what the trailer was and what I wanted to be was mostly fantastic. I really liked them kind of it being this road movie, and them kind of going place to place and tracking these guys down and getting closer. I think the kind of relationship between the two of them was pretty interesting. I think like Makem and Rowe is just so absurdly good in everything. Yeah. And again, it's just worth saying because, you know, genre fans should be aware of her by now after, you know, It Follows and The Guest and Villains. Like, she's been in so many great films. And she's like one of those ones that really blows me away how she hasn't hit the mainstream yet.
I know.
Because in recent years, when we've had these big breakouts like the Anyas and the Florences and stuff, like the mainstream just gets a hold of them immediately. And you know, sometimes we're lucky if they'll come back to us, but like you just lose them forever. And like, I don't know how that's not really happened for her. She hasn't really had like a big either Netflix show or like a big film that I'm aware of. Like, she's mostly just dabbled in cool films like this. Which I'm super thankful for, and actually her upcoming project is one that we've discussed in the news, which is Osgood Perkins' upcoming movie, which is like a sounds like Silence of the Lambs, where it's like an FBI agent tracking down a serial killer, and that's her with Nick Cage as the two leads, and I'm like, that sounds so good. Yeah. So that's very exciting. But yeah, it's obviously great for us that she's continuing to make these movies, but it does blow me away because I'm like, she's so absurdly talented. And even in a movie, was it called Watcher that we saw last year that wasn't very good, but she was still great in that. And then let alone like all of these really actual good films that she's been in, like obviously It Follows is exceptional. And like her, she was so good in Villains as well. But yeah, I loved her in this. Like, I think she got across the kind of the brokenness of her character so well. I think she was the one character that actually benefited from story and screen time, because early on it was like, oh yeah, she's just a jolted cult member, which again was enough for me, and kind of pairing her with Bob to track down the daughter. But actually learning more about how she got kind of in with them and how they were able to kind of brainwash her and how her life has been taken from her and like her motivations as to why she doesn't want to see someone else go through this, I thought was really awesome and really kind of powerful at times, and was pretty much like the heart and soul of the film. Because I think Bob's like such an interesting character. He's named perfectly because he is just Bob, isn't he? Like
he is just a shell. He is the generic like dad after his daughter. You know, he could almost be a mute in this movie.
Yeah. He really is like a silent protagonist. Mm. Where like everyone he meets is super interesting because he meets obviously Case being the best of them. But then I really liked. Cyrus is the main guy, right? And then I think it's Errol was the other guy that we see a lot, sort of in the bar and stuff, which he was great as well. Like
he a scared guy?
He was just constantly popping up, and the secondary characters were really awesome. And then and then Bob's just there, and he is very one note. He's very just like, "Where is my daughter?" And that's kind of it.
Do they call him Sheep or something? What do they call him?
Yeah, well, the Sheep are the followers of the gang, and then she calls him Coyote.
I thought they...
Oh, they do have a name for him as well, but I can't remember what they call him.
And they just call him that, and then just turn him back up.
Yeah, because they think he's basically like a dad, don't they? Yeah. Like, when he's just showing up.
Or like a sugar daddy.
Yeah, because there is questions about this, like... I feel like this is a movie that I really liked, and I think the overall vibe of it is great. I think there's a lot of individual things that aren't great, which you can kind of break down. Yeah. But I think I'd rather just lead with the feeling it left me, because I feel like that's ultimately what's the most important thing. And I really liked it. I really enjoyed this film, even though it is definitely too long. And it's sadly just, it's so obviously where you could cut it, because it has an entire subplot, which is unnecessary. There's four characters that don't need to be in this film, that I don't think really added anything to it other than slowing it down. So I think if this was like an hour and 45 and it was just Case and Bob and the gang, I think this would have been really good. But I still really liked it. But yeah, we can kind of get into more, because I think, I really want to talk about Bob specifically and what you thought of him, especially the performance as well. But I really liked it. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I had a really good time with this too. I think, you know, as you said, you know, when we talk about a movie that's 2 hours, 30 minutes, a horror movie, we're gonna talk about its runtime, and it definitely does overstay its welcome in some areas. You know, you've already said that side plot really is, you know, too much. But other than that, because a lot of the time, this movie, just throughout the entire time, it kept throwing me curveballs.
Mm.
You know, they instantly find the gang quite quickly.
Yeah.
You know, Case instantly gets back in with them, and then she gets back out, and, you know, then they have this standoff, then they have this whole drug thing going on, and there's like all of these different things, and every time I'm expecting that to be the finale, and it's not. And it kind of did that, you know, multiple times throughout the movie. I think it, you know, the thing that really stands out in this, which we've said time and time again, like, it's crazy that, like, the violence that's in this movie is obscene. This has got some of the most violent gunshots I've ever seen in my life. There's the one with Cyrus where he shoots a woman in the face about 12 times.
Mm.
And firstly, like, everyone in this movie is a fucking, like, military sniper, because they're just hitting headshots for days. Like, he hits like 15 headshots. He unloads an entire ammo clip into her face, and there's people standing within about 2 yards of her, and they don't blink. They're like, he ain't gonna miss, that's fine. And like, as the body's fallen, he's still hitting the face constantly. And then we have like another character that shoots someone in the face 3 times in a row from like a good 15 yards away.
Yeah, everyone's just got aimbots in this film, haven't they? Like,
yeah, I'm like, fucking keyboard mouse players, like, get a controller, like. And but the violence was really over the top and very enjoyable. You know, I think that was a standout for me, that you know, just so many scenes where you just think it's going to be a normal shootout, and then someone's face gets blown off and someone's leg gets blown off, and it was just so over the top and really enjoyable. And the opening scenes of this movie really blew me away. Like, it started so incredibly strong. Like, the kidnapping scene was just really intense, really terrifying, and just really set up this gang perfectly. Like, when that girl, she's just stood there with a balloon. And when you see the van pull up and you see the creepy characters like smile at her, you're like, oh, okay, how are they subtly gonna like steal her when she's away? And it's like, no, they just fucking charge at her. Like, that was terrifying for me.
Mm-hmm.
That they just had the balls to, like, in clear daylight, just run at her from like the pincer maneuver from Jurassic Park. And I was like, yeah, this is pretty terrifying. And then to kind of transitioned from that to like very quickly to the scene of Bob's daughter getting kidnapped, which again was a very brutal scene, and both of those had like a really strong choice of a musical number being played over the top that worked very well. And it was weird because almost for the rest of the movie, music felt like way more in the background and way less prevalent. And it was very strange that, like, these two scenes were just so, you know, the music is in my head as I'm talking about them. And that kind of disappeared for the rest of the movie for me, which was a little bit of a shame. But the opening was, yeah, just so incredibly strong with those two scenes. But then, you know, you then know what this gang is capable of, and you know the danger that she's in. So, you know, with Bob then being Bob, it's like, because I think, you know, when you watch a movie like Taken and you've got like this Liam Neeson character, it's all about him and like, you know, his specific skill set and all of this stuff, and like very much about him being this wrong dad to mess with. Whereas this just feels like, you know, they just mess with Bob.
Mm.
Like, but, you know, a dad's love is going to be, you know, good enough where he is just like, oh, yeah, fuck it, I'll get a face tattoo and, yeah, I'll do whatever I need to do. Like, I'll get bit by a snake, what of it? Like, if that gets my kid back. And, yeah, he had no value on his life and no value on his body or anything. All he cared about was getting his daughter back, which just, you know, that transcends as a parent love. You know, that's, you know, that's all that's needed. You don't need to be this badass or anything else. It's just like, no, I've just got nothing else to lose. Like, almost everyone else in the movie has stakes and things to lose, and he's just like, well, I've just got that one thing that you've got. Like, there's nothing else you can hold over me. So he is all or nothing, and I think that works well.
So did you like Bob in general in the film?
He's just Bob.
Yeah.
I don't even know whether I like him or dislike him. I just, he did the job. He'll do.
Yeah, like, I think I agree completely with what you've said, actually, in terms of, like, it's more of a realistic portrayal of what this character would actually be, which is that he is so switched off and he is so only got one thing on his mind, where, like, say, he will run through brick walls quite literally and just be like, I don't care about anything as long as my daughter is safe, and no matter what happens to me, that's irrelevant at this point. And so I think that does work. It was just because everyone else was so interesting, he just, to me, was the least interesting character.
But I
kind of agree with you of, like, it, but it made sense for what this was. And I was torn because I was like, what is it that isn't working? Where I was like, is it the performance? Am I thinking that Nicolas is just not very good in this? I was kind of thinking maybe he was miscast, where I didn't necessarily believe he was Bob. Or is it just the case of, you know, he's just the least interesting part of the film and he just served his role perfectly? So I don't really know what it is, to be honest. But I did leave the movie being slightly disappointed, I guess, with, like, there was two actors that we knew, you know, going in that I was excited for, and Micah just over-delivered massively. And this was probably my favorite performance of hers, actually, that I've ever seen. You know, it's not the best movie she's been in, because that's It Follows, but I just thought she was so unbelievably exceptional in this, whereas he was, like, not that great. Like, you know, there was a lot of other characters I thought were better.
Yeah, she definitely led it. For sure. And, you know, I think, like you said, her extra development that we got to see kind of her backstory and to see her, you know, the stake she had and what she's lost and her coming to the realization of what she's lost and that what she'll never get back, like, was really powerful. You know, because, you know, it almost happened with Bob and his daughter, really, that, like, you know, when we get to, like, the final kind of, you know, moments of this, it's almost like Bob and the movie is just like, well, if he gets her back, then she's good. Like, she's safe. Like, he's got her back and everything's great. And I'm like, no, it's not great. Like, this gang has had her for weeks. Isn't it like 8 or 12 weeks or something by the time he
even gets
introduced to Case? Yeah. Like, so, like, what the hell has this gang done with her in the last 2 or 3 months? Like, she's got the, you know, she's got this tattoo. Like, God knows what they've done to her. Like, she is going to be messed up afterwards. And I think, like, seeing Case and seeing someone come out of it as strong as she is, but still clearly fucked up and got a lot to deal with, was a really fascinating, multi-layered character that helped me, you know, see what Bob's daughter was going through and what, you know, what could she be like the other side of this? You know, best case scenario, Bob rescues her. Okay, how is she going to be then? Like, when this is all said and done, and kind of seeing Case is that representation of that. But yeah, the other side plots were very confusing. You know, when we had this kind of, you know, the sheriff and the politician or mayor or whatever he is, kind of having these scenes with this wife, and like, I was getting so confused between who was the sheriff and who was like the mayor guy.
Yeah,
and
then was as well.
And I was like, is the wife like just with them both?
Or I was like struggling as well, like who was related to who as well and stuff like that. It was just very weird.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I'm not the only one, because after Oppenheimer last week and then this movie, I'm like, I just don't know whether I can handle these like movies anymore, where I'm just like.
Oh, Oppenheimer was easy to follow.
Sorry?
Oppenheimer was easy to follow.
Yeah, because I was just like, yeah, there were so many people, and there was a point when, like, they mentioned someone's name, and I had to, like, pause the movie and look on IMDb and be like, oh, okay, that is Sam, because they mentioned, like, Sam, and I was like, is that the stepdad? And I was like, I think it
is. The name Sam could be literally anyone as well. It could be any from like the teenage daughter to like literally any exactly. character in this film could be called
exactly.
Sam.
Exactly. And all they said was Sam was sleeping with whoever. And I'm like, well, from the way you described that, I think you're going to be talking about the stepdad, but I need a double check. And so I literally had to pause it. It just felt super unnecessary because from the opening scene, we can just see this gang is fucked up and they're crazy. So them just doing like a Manson-style home invasion and kidnapping someone just felt like natural for this gang.
Mm.
And I didn't need them to have this kind of reason. And I almost liked it less that they were hired to do it.
I
would have much preferred it to be like, nah, they just want to have a crazy night and try to get, you know, that's how they recruit. They kidnap someone, they see what happens, see if they can break them, or if not, they kill them. You know, because that compound that they go to where it's like that weird torture room and then there's all the body parts in the garden outside. It's like, yeah, they go there to see if, you know, that's the initiation, make or break you, basically. And I kind of wish that they'd have touched on that a little bit more. The fact that Bob's daughter wasn't dead, like, that's a bad sign. Because that means that she's been initiated almost. Like, yeah. I was wondering whether when we get like Bob and her face to face, like, is she gonna like want to fuck him up because she's already turned? And it was like, you know, it felt like she was way too much of the victim, when actually, because she'd been with the gang that long, I feel like, you know, the brainwashing and everything should have happened a bit more than what it actually did.
Yeah, I feel like that whole element and kind of the are they, aren't they a cult, and the kind of the even the title of this movie, which is kind of vaguely explained at one point. I feel like all of that stuff was clearly must have just been better in the book, because that, like I say, that is undercooked for a movie that is this long. I didn't get a sense of truly what it was. You know, there's really cool moments where they're talking about like when they kill people and they're passing over and stuff like that, and they clearly do believe in certain ideals and certain gods and kind of, you know, Case and Bob have a few conversations in the car early on, which I think are really intriguing.
About race and everything.
Yeah, exactly, about his sort of more ideal, old-fashioned ideas on religion versus their kind of radical ideas. And I think some of that stuff is super fascinating, but that just gets thrown away because then it does just become more of a fun action movie, and it definitely is that when it is him tracking down and him bloody fighting snakes in his car, and obviously the entire finale is just like them just trying to make a John Wick movie. Like, it's hilarious and it's super entertaining. Like, there's a man on fire, so I had a great time. So like, I really liked it for what it was, but it is like, again, it's a big film, so you know, tonally it's not consistent. Like, this,
how many times in the movie did you think Bob was dead?
Oh god, so many. Like, I mean, at the end it's ridiculous, but like, I feel like that's just something that we have to accept in modern day films now, that everyone is, you know, Superman at this point.
I like it though. I think if you've got to lean into it like this movie does, where it's like, you can't just let them be a little bit fucked up.
Yeah, true.
Like,
yeah, because like, if it had got out of this with just a few scratches and bruises, it would have been ridiculous, but he really went through the ringer.
Yeah, I was going to say, pretty much anything, you know, he was stabbed, bitten, set on fire, shot, like, you know, pretty much anything, you know, was he poisoned at one point?
Yeah, by the snake, like, probably, yeah. Oh, yeah, he got the anti-venom.
Yeah, basically anything that could happen to him happened to him.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is great seeing that kind of transition of like, but he's just still the same stoic guy. I think that's what was so funny to me, was that I really thought Bob would end up being more radical by the end of it and being more like fuck the world and have like a mohawk and shit, and but he is still he's still just the same guy, like slowly cleaning his car like on a Sunday, but with a face tattoo.
That final scene when he's cleaning the car and like just with the vest top on and like the hat cleaning the car.
The hat killed me. I was singing Limp Bizkit for like 3 minutes because of that bloody hat. It's so funny.
Like, it absolutely killed me. And I was just like, yeah, this is Bob.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, He's not going to change for anyone. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter that he's, you know, had all this fucked up shit happen. He's like, he's back. He just wants to clean his truck. Yeah. That's what he cares about.
He knows who he is, and we can all strive to be that confident in ourselves one day.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's like, do you know what? Just because I've got a face tattoo and all these other tattoos doesn't mean I'm not going to be Bob. Like, you know, I'm not going to just go drink in a heavy metal bar now. Like, no, I'm going to clean my truck and I'm going to wear my vest still.
Yeah.
I'm going to wear my Limp Bizkit.
That was comical at the end.
It was genius. But yeah, no, I really like this. And the weird thing about it as well is, even though like the extra subplot and everything does get in the way, I never was pissed off watching this movie. Mm-hmm. I was never bored. The subplot had shit going on, I just wasn't that into it, but it never bored me with what it was doing. And ultimately, when people start shooting each other, it's just really entertaining because it's hyper violent and really, really, you know, gory and entertaining. You know, it's an amped up version of John Wick. It's a more gory version. When the movie ended, it just kind of, you know, I felt confused about a couple of things, but ultimately was like, that was just a really fun action movie that really had me invested from the start with those opening scenes. I think the first two scenes are the best scenes of the movie.
Mm.
and then the rest is just this, you know, really entertaining action that we get.
I also think like Case just grounds this film, because whilst you have the subplot, you know that at least, within the next 10 minutes, you're going to see her on screen again. And I feel like she is so fascinating. I think she's one of the best characters we've seen in a film this year, because she has so much going on, so many different layers, so much development throughout the whole movie, and is so torn at different times around what she actually wants in her life. And you see that through that performance. Like, she is one of those actors that, again, through just facial expressions, and you look in her eyes in this film, you know, this is, again, another movie that is not afraid to just have a lot of close-ups of characters. And you see that in her eyes, that, like, I don't feel like I'm watching an actor. It's crazy. Like, I know she's an actor. I've seen her in other films. But when I see her on screen, I'm looking at Case. And I'm looking at the shit that she's gone through as a human being. Like, it's wild that she's able to get across that level of emotion.
Yeah, well, when these characters as well are covered in tattoos like this, it can be distracting.
Yeah.
And I think having her covered in these crazy, you know, amount of tattoos all over her body and face, it should have taken away from her performance. Mm. And it just shows how strong her performance was, that even effectively with this mask on, like, we were able to get all of this through, and that we weren't distracted by her look, and it was that her performance was, you know, powerful enough. I think, you know, that really did ring true. There are, like, you know, there are a lot, like you say, it makes perfect sense that it is from a book, because like Jamie Foxx's character, I was just like, I have no idea who this guy is.
Yeah, completely, like, unnecessary.
Like, he's clearly some sort of member of this gang, very respected, because he's the whole reason why Case was allowed to leave, because if they hadn't have been there, she'd have been killed. But he kind of was like, let her go, guys, like, come on.
Mm.
And like, but then he's not with the gang, he's kind of on his own, but they don't fuck with him. He's the ferryman. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, he
like,
was. I didn't
understand what he was.
I found him really disappointing, because he was one that, from the trailer, he's got such a striking look that is so different to Jamie. And I like Jamie as well. So I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then, yeah, the scenes he's in are so forgettable. Like, there's some of the most forgettable scenes that Kaser is in as well, actually, where I don't think everyone else adds so much to her story. But I agree that his relationship with her just kind of confused me and didn't really add much to it, where she has different relationships with like this female gang member, and obviously her relationship with Cyrus, and you know, the stuff with her mom. Like, there's so much interesting stuff there, but specifically with this ferryman character, he is like this side protagonist that just doesn't seem to have been filled in at all, where it's like, who is he? Why is he? What is he in this world? Like, that's something that you could have spent time answering, whereas instead they were like, why did the gang target, you know, this guy's family? And I'm like, I don't care. And now you've told me it, like, I completely agree with you that I loved the fact that it is that kind of strangers, like, you know, just because you were home, like, random element. That's so much more scary. And especially because they're they're so clearly evoking the Manson stuff as well. They even say it in the news report as well, like, worst kidnapping, you know, or worst killing since Manson. And, like, it's, you know, it's in the LA Hills. Like, it's so evoking that moment. And so for them to kind of add on this bolt on this backstory, it's, I don't know, it was unnecessary.
The guy who was scared the whole movie as well, what was his character name?
Errol.
Yeah, I was pretty confused by him as well, because he's with the gang, but then he's also the drug lord. So I'm like, he's with the gang the whole time, why couldn't they have done the deal like any moment? But then, like, I was, when he was like, this is my house, and like in that scene, I was so confused. I was like, wait, I thought you were like the little bitch of the gang, but you're the dealer that's dealing with the gang. I was like, mate, I don't know who you are, but never mind. Let's just see you get shot in the face.
Yeah, like, I was also confused with a few things like that in terms of who actually people are and who they're working for. But he was just so entertaining that I kind of got over it. Because there are a couple of other characters like that where they're just not as entertaining, whereas I'll give you a pass. Like say, with someone like the ferryman, if those scenes were so interesting. And I think the fact that he's involved in the tattoo stuff as well, which, again, that could have been better. Like, when Bob gets tattooed, specifically the rest of his body, not the facial one, it's so just quickly done. I'm so blasé. It's just like, you blink and suddenly he's got an entire chest and his arms covered, which takes about 25 hours, by the way. And, like, it's just done instantly, or seemingly instantly. Like, it must have been multiple days, but either way. And then, obviously, like, Case is the one who kind of gets to do the big tattoo, and then they talk about, you know, that's her symbol, and that kind of gives her way, her presence to the gang later on and stuff like that. So her tattoo had so much more meaning in the story rather than, like, all of these other ones that this other guy did. So that was, you know, that could have been better. But I actually, you mentioned, like, the soundtrack. I really liked the soundtrack. To me, that was one of my favorite things, where specifically this being a road movie, there is, like, a lot of scenes of them just in the car. And you're seeing them travel from place to place, and again, you're seeing the emotion on their faces and what they're going through, just with some, like, really banging songs playing in the background.
I think it was the prevalence that the opening scenes, the music was so strong, and I felt and really well done. And, you know, we never got that again, like, in these big scenes, that the music was in the background, like you said, in the car. Yeah, really good songs and overall a really good soundtrack, but just kind of, I thought there was going to be more of this, you know, just overpowering kind of soundtrack in these big pivotal moments.
Yeah, like Oppenheimer, where it's just like blasting your eardrums. Whereas in this one, it's just more just tickling in the background. It's just, you know, it's just there. But yeah, it was a good time, this one. Like, it was a super interesting movie that I'm glad I saw. I think as far as recommendations go, it's kind of crazy for a movie this long. Like, I don't think we recommend too many films that are this long. But I'd have to recommend it because I had such a good time with it. Like I say, it has problems that we've discussed, like many films this year. You know, it's very difficult. So especially, you know, you're just stacking the odds against you when you're making a 2.5 hour movie as well, because you know the odds of you getting some things that don't land. But like, overall, this is easily a great film. And yeah, the vibe I'll take this. I know this is a movie that, whilst I really liked now, when I look back on in like 3 years' time, that subplot will have evaporated from my mind. And all I'll remember is Case and the crazy action with Bob and these awesome moments with the cult. And I'll be like, oh man, all of those scenes were awesome. And so it'll only go up
in my face 50 times.
Yeah, exactly. Just like the overall wildness of it. And then really thinking about the kind of the story of it. So I know that the the unfortunate parts will not be as prevalent. And obviously we have to talk about them in a critical review, but like my overall feeling was not hampered by it. Like I'll take away such good moments. Like the visual style of this, I love. Like it's got such a cool look. Like I say, it's easy to do that. Like, oh, everyone's got a bunch of tattoos to try and give them like fake personalities. But like they broke through that. It kind of is just a background to who they are. And I think people like Cyrus and Case and even, you know, Errol and some of the other characters, like they have so much going on. They don't just rely on that as their, oh yeah, they're only interesting because they got face tattoos. Like there's a lot going on here. So yeah, I would definitely recommend this one.
Yeah, I think, you know, normally the runtime does get in the way, but with this one, it really, yeah, it didn't bother me. Like I got through this movie pretty easily, even with the subplots that I didn't overly enjoy. Like the action and yeah, Case just really stood out. And so yeah, I would definitely recommend this one. I think you're going to have a really good time with the violence and gore that's in there, and then get invested in that story. And ultimately, I think that's the thing, that this isn't Bob and his daughter's story. This is Case's story. Yeah. And it's hidden. There's Bob and this kind of, you know, dad going after his daughter, but that's really not what this movie is. And I think kind of that's what you'll get out of it. And yeah, one of the standout performances of the year for sure.
Yeah, 100%. I think the ending proves that as well, obviously, without going into it. But like, it really does show you that Bob's story gets resolved, and you're like, wait, there's 20 minutes more. And it's because, yeah, our lead character hasn't had their story resolved at that point. But yeah, super good time. Finally a good movie to discuss, which is always good. But yeah, that was our discussion on God is a Bullet. We'll take a quick break and we will be right back. So yeah, that's pretty much it for another week. This was a very, very enjoyable one, actually. Get to see a very cool, unique film, which not many people are talking about either. Like, I'm so glad I found this and just randomly watched that trailer, because it was, you know, we were waiting to see if this would get a release, like a big screen release, but it's such a tiny release. And it's a shame, because this would have been a banging cinema watch.
Oh, it really would have been.
Yeah, like it's one of those ones that back in the day when we would have potentially got lucky to see it. Because, yeah, just the visuals and the style and everything and the soundtrack as well. Like it would have been so cool to see that on the big screen. But still a fantastic watch. And then, yeah, like you just said, the news was unbelievable. Like I don't even know which one of those three I'm the most buzzed about. No, it's also different as well. It's like the guaranteed just something that I wanted to happen and I know isn't a disappointment is Hellraiser. Like that's just awesome, knowing that I've got this incredibly exciting movie to look forward to in the coming years. And then obviously Saw actually maybe being good. Yeah, maybe we finally that would be like so perfect for this podcast at this point, after doing it for this long, where like we've just been so starved. And obviously we've talked about the old films and you can go back and listen to those retrospectives, but like god, it'd be nice to cover like a good new Saw movie, because like say what we've got to have with Scream, and I don't think it's going to be that level.
That's like, the redemption that's enjoyable arc,
yeah,
that like Scream never went shit, and it was just like, you know, we've talked a lot about Wes Craven in this podcast, and other than that, retrospectively the thing that we've covered the most is the Saw movies, where we've spoken about every one of those movies where we've got podcasts on them, even though we're a current horror podcast show, and then been so hyped and seen two movies for this show, like, you know, when they came out, and they've both been utter dog shit and broke our souls. So to have one that could, you know, us to be excited about would be the real redemption story for sure.
Yeah, it would be crazy. Like, oh man, what a world to live in if like Saw is actually good and Scream is actually good. Like, it's great. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Like I say, it's just around the corner now, so we haven't got to wait long, and we've got plenty to fill our time since then. We've got big cinema releases. We've actually got, you know, quite a few still on demand, similar, so hopefully they're as good as this week's film. You know, this was just sitting there chilling for a few weeks until we finally watched it. So you never know, do you, until you actually see these films. But yeah, that was episode 358. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone. Shut up, I can't. Mainly because I never could. How could I start that?